This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care, here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News Talk Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm Jason Kong alongside Mary Lucas and Carson Sellers of Transitions Life Care. Mary, we'll start with you. How are you doing today?
Good. You know, is it winter? I was saying earlier as we were walking in today, it's like it just snow or move on to spring. I'm really tired of this like back and forth and, you know, or just be summer. That's my favorite. Summer in North Carolina, the sticky, hot, sweaty, gross. I love it.
Man, you're already ready for summer. You're ready to leap forward. Carson,
skip it.
How are you doing today?
Doing well. Agree with Mary about the weather, though. We're getting tired of it.
Yeah, well, that's North Carolina for you. We just got to bear through it and get through the next couple of weeks here. Well, we've got a great show lined up for today. We're going to be talking about all things related to aging. We've got an exciting list of topics that we're going to get through today, and we are very thankful that we have Dr. Corinne Allman joining us on the line. She's an author, speaker, and a care manager. Dr. Allman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
You know, when I was preparing for the show and thinking about all the different things we could talk about in regards to your work and your book and aging, I mean, we could talk about anything. And I was like, what? I don't know where to start. So I'm going to start there, actually. I would love for you to tell us a little bit more before we dive into all the subjects about what inspired you to focus on changing the conversation around aging, which we will then get into.
Sure. So as you mentioned, my day job is as a care manager. I run a care management agency in Greensboro, North Carolina. And when I started that agency 12 years ago now, I really had the idea in my head that I was going to be working with 40-year-old adult children who were caring for 70-year-old aging parents. And nothing is further from the truth than that perception. What I actually do is work with 70-year-old adult children who are caring for their 90-something-year-old parents. And I have a background in gerontology, which is the study of older adults. I have a lot of experience in this field. And I realized that if my perceptions of older adulthood were so wrong, even with all of my training and experience, that everybody else is thinking about this the wrong way too. And so that personal realization of how inaccurate my stereotypes, my thought processes were, is what led me to writing the book and kind of going down this path of advocating for us to change how we're thinking about growing older.
That's very interesting. And you're right. I probably would have said the same thing when you think about who is taking care of their loved ones. I'm guilty. I would have thought the same thing. So in your book, which is called Teenagers and Telling a New Story About Aging, you are really challenging some societal views about aging, just like we just talked about. What are some of the key takeaways before we dive into a little bit more from the book that you would love our listeners to know about?
So I think the essential takeaway is that older adulthood has changed. The older adulthood that your parents or your grandparents had is quite different than the older adulthood people are experiencing now and that we might expect to experience in the future. And part of that's because we're living so much longer, we're living healthier, and so the things that we might have thought about being what life would be like at 65, that's much more likely to be what life is like now at 75 or 85. And so that shift has happened, but our thinking around older adulthood has not. So that's one of the key takeaways. And then I think another essential takeaway is you have tremendous power over how your older adulthood goes. It is a lot about what you are doing, but it's also a lot about what you are thinking, how you are talking to yourself in your own head about your aging. You know, are you saying things to yourself like, well, I'm too old for that, or it's too late for that? You know, those kinds of thought processes may seem innocuous, but they're actually quite powerful, because those thoughts lead to behaviors, and those behaviors will either lead you down the path towards a healthy, active older adulthood, or down the path towards, well, there's nothing I can do about it, and it's all downhill from here. And you don't do the things to take care of yourself and to have that ideal aging experience.
Absolutely. That's all very important. I think it's very important how you're shifting perspectives and challenging ageism. And speaking of ageism, we know that it's a topic that's close to your heart. It's not just about social perceptions. It's deeply rooted in things like business, healthcare, and even personal experiences. Can you share your thoughts on ageism in today's society?
Sure. So, I mean, first of all, I think we should define ageism, because mm-hmm. it is amazing to me how many times I will go to do a presentation or do a talk, and I ask if there's anyone who's never heard of ageism or doesn't know what it is, and inevitably multiple hands go up. So the first thing is to define that. So ageism is bias towards anyone based on their age, and I'm primarily focusing on that as it's related to older adults, but it can impact anyone. So young adults also experience ageism when they're told that they're too young for a position, or they're too young to understand something, things like that. That is also ageism. So that's the bias. In terms of our older adults specifically, we definitely see ageism as a problem that they face, particularly in the healthcare world, where maybe their healthcare issues aren't taken as seriously as they would have been when they were younger. You know, you go to the doctor and you've got a problem, and instead of really addressing the problem or ordering tests to try to figure out what's going on, your doctor just kind of says, well, you know, you're getting older, and doesn't really offer you the same kind of treatment that they would if you were 20 years younger than your current age as an older adult. And I see this all the time in care management, because we're going with people to their doctor's appointments and trying to advocate on their behalf, you know, to get those tests, to get the problem solved. And you really do have to advocate, because, you know, our doctors and nurses are overwhelmed and overworked, and they also are subject to the same societal stereotypes about older adulthood that all the rest of us are. And so that bias can lead them down that path towards, well, you know, you're getting older, what do you expect? So we see it in that world. We certainly see it in business, when we start to treat employees as they get into their 50s, instead of continuing to invest in them in terms of professional development or promotions, we start thinking as a business, well, you know, they're probably going to retire soon, so they wouldn't want to do that professional development, or they wouldn't want that promotion, or we don't want to give them that promotion because we don't want to invest and then have them leave later or in the not too distant future. And really, that should be a conversation that people have, because the assumption that someone wants to retire is just that. It's an assumption. And some people may be headed down that path, but a lot of our 60-year-olds are still interested in working and feel like they're kind of at the peak of their abilities in terms of what they know and what they can do. So having that conversation with an employee is so important, rather than just making an assumption that somebody's ready to leave. And also thinking about the benefits of having an intergenerational workforce, because people of different generations have different skill sets. And that isn't a detriment. It can be quite a benefit to a business to have those different generations working together to utilize those different skills and abilities. So ageism is everywhere. It's also in your own head. Again, when you're saying things like to yourself, like, I'm too old for that, you know, pausing and thinking, why do I think that? You know, who told me that whatever this age is too old? I had a conversation the other day with someone who was in their 40s, and she said, well, I just think I'm too old to start a business. And I looked at her and said, I've got 65-year-olds who are starting new businesses. 40 is not too old. But somewhere along the way, society, something has taught her or given her this message that, well, if you haven't started a business by 40, it's way too late. And I think we really have to stop and question when thoughts like that go through our own heads, because, you know, there is no such thing as it's too late. It's only a question of, are you willing to put forth that effort to start that business or do that new thing?
It's really strange how these thoughts or these rules, I guess, creep into our mind when, you know, there's no overt discussion saying that, you know, you can't do this past a certain age. We just kind of make those assumptions. It's a really fascinating conversation that we're having with Dr. Corinne Allman, and we're going to continue that right after this. Dr. Corinne Allman is a author, speaker, and care manager, and we've got more related to ageism and all things aging right after this. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680 WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com with your host, Mary Lucas and Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Thank you so much for being here with us today. Jason Kong in the studio with Mary Lucas and Carson Sellers, and we are so grateful to have on the line with us today Dr. Corinne Allman. She's a author, speaker, and care manager, and we're talking about all things related to aging. And Mary, we were just wrapping up a conversation related to ageism and how that often creeps into our thinking without being very overt. And it's kind of scary in the way that Dr. Owen's been talking, because, yeah, there are some things that we relate to our age and what we can do or we can't do or we should do and shouldn't do. And really, there's no basis to it.
No, I agree. And, you know, I've had this experience before, and I'm glad that we're talking about all the different ages in ageism, because it's not just our older populations, also our younger populations. And coming from a leadership perspective as somebody who is a younger leader, I've felt this before, and it is powerful in a way that is not good. You know, I've had people say, oh, Mary wouldn't know that song, she's too young, in meetings before, or, oh, but Mary doesn't have any children and she's not married, so, like, she wouldn't understand what we're talking about. And it's, you know, those things can be damaging. And I have felt myself trying to, like, hide my age in certain environments to avoid that. But what advice would you give to someone who may be experiencing not just the younger end of the spectrum, but also the older end of the spectrum, age-related challenges in their job?
So it's going to depend on the industry that you're in, because, you know, some industries do still have mandatory retirement ages. Mm-hmm. And so that is something you are facing. There's not a lot we can do about that in terms of that particular position. I had somebody recently that I was talking to, and he was facing mandatory retirement at 65, and he felt like he was still at the top of his game, and he was trying to figure out, what am I going to do with myself now? And we were really talking through all the different, what do you want to do with yourself right now? Like, what are the things that would kind of ignite your passion for getting out of bed on a Wednesday morning after you're facing this mandatory retirement? So certain things we can't avoid. But if you are in a position where you are still really enjoying what you do, and yet you're starting to kind of feel the pressure from people around you, or you feel like the company's kind of sending you messages about they're expecting you to leave soon, I think the best thing is to have direct conversations. If you are still interested in continuing to work, if you want to be part of that professional training that's coming up, you know, making that clear to the people you're working for or working with that, hey, my plans are to be here for the foreseeable future. I want to continue to learn. I want to continue to develop as a professional in this field. Because when we don't talk about it, when we just kind of lurks in the background, again, we make a lot of assumptions about what's happening, and those assumptions can lead to poor outcomes. It's a direct mm-hmm. conversation much better to have. The other thing is, if you are thinking that you're going to retire in the not too distant future, you know, we should be able to have honest conversations about that. I know sometimes people are afraid that if they let their employer know, hey, I'm thinking about leaving, that they may help them get out the door a little faster than they originally anticipated. And that is unfair and should not be happening. But, you know, if you feel like you can have those conversations, the other thing that can come out of it, you may be able to do a staged retirement where you go part-time and or you job share with somebody else so that you can help train that new person as they come in, and you get to work part-time while also vacationing and doing the things you want to do with your free time. And so it opens the door. Being able to have those honest conversations can open the door to different kinds of job structures and possibilities that can be beneficial for both the employer and the employee. What I see happen too often is we don't have these conversations, and then there's a lot of kind of lurking stuff in the background, and people start to get asked all the time, like, well, when are you going to retire? Or are you thinking about retiring? And that starts to feel to them like a message from society, from their coworkers, from people in general that says, well, we're ready for you to retire. We're ready for you to move on. Aren't you done yet? I've got a friend who's, he's 69, he's still working, and he loves what he does. But he says, people ask him all the time, why haven't you retired? Are you going to retire? When are you going to retire? And it makes him kind of feel like, is something wrong? And he said to me, if I got really bad at my job, would somebody tell me? Is that what they're trying to tell me now? Is it that I've gotten bad and they're trying to send me a message? And I don't actually think it's that at all. I think it's just our societal narrative that when somebody gets to a certain age, that's just the conversation starter we have. Oh, have you retired? When are you going to retire? We don't necessarily mean anything by it, but boy, we say it all the time. When people get to a certain age, we just expect it. And if they haven't done it, we start looking at them like they're kind of weird. And that makes people very uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think having that direct and honest conversation can definitely help eliminate some of that weirdness revolving around it. Honing in a little bit more, in our industry at Transitions Life Care, we see that healthcare providers often fail to advocate for preventative measures, focusing instead on a model of simply managing chronic illness. How can healthcare providers start to shift their approach to a more person-centered, age-inclusive care?
Oh, man. if I answer to that question for our entire healthcare system, right? Mm-hmm. The shift that needs to happen away from just let's fix you when you're broken versus let's help prevent a lot of these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that's an issue that's really narrowly focused on older adults. I think mm-hmm. that's true for our healthcare system at all ages, mm-hmm. that we focus way too much on what's wrong with you and let's fix it versus really teaching people or talking to people about how to take care of themselves, how to stay healthy, you know, what is good nutrition, what is a good activity level, all of those things. And unfortunately, I think at this moment, that is very much on the individual to try to learn and figure out, because our healthcare system is not set up to really teach people those things or to take care of you in a preventative way other than just your annual exam and the preventative or screening tests that, you know, your insurance will cover. The rest of it is really up to you to try to figure out on your own, because unfortunately, health insurance does not reimburse for that kind of preventative, you know, teach you how to take care of yourself type of care.
You know, as a care navigator in the work that you do with caregivers, how have you seen examples of ageism in the work that you're doing, the direct examples, and how someone could balance advocating for an elderly individual without overstepping or creating tension with a healthcare provider? I've seen this happen, and I wonder if you have any advice for those who are managing this situation themselves.
Sure. So it, you know, it is a bit of a balancing act in the sense that you don't want to, first of all, you don't want to speak for an older adult who's able to speak for themselves, right? If you're the adult child or you're a care manager and you are working with an older adult who is competent and can speak for themselves, then you need to let them speak for themselves. And I see this all the time when we go for visits where the healthcare provider tries to talk to me or talk to the adult child instead of talking to the older adult directly. And they're trying to get their work done as efficiently as possible, but that assumption that the older adult doesn't understand or doesn't hear, or that we somehow need to talk to the other people, that is ageism at play for sure. And so in that situation, I would very directly say to the care provider, you know, she's here, she can understand, please direct all of your questions to this individual rather than to me. If I felt like my older adult was not advocating for themselves or not getting their questions answered, then I might step in and more directly try to ask a question. But I would still phrase it as, you know, she really wants to know XYZ. Can you answer that for us? That kind of thing. So that it keeps that older adult directly involved in their care. But sometimes you do have to, you know, kind of advocate for someone, particularly if you've got any sort of cognitive impairment, or even if it, I think a lot of our older adults today are of a generation where you didn't argue with healthcare providers. You know, healthcare has changed in that sense, and that now it is seen as much more of a collaborative sort of endeavor between your healthcare provider and you. But a lot of our older adults grew up in a time when that wasn't the case. The doctor was the doctor and they knew everything and you were just there to get their advice and you didn't really argue with them. So that is a different dynamic that we may have to help them overcome. I was actually with a client yesterday at the hospital, and she was talking about that very thing, because we had a doctor come in and talk with us. And she said, after the doctor left, she said, "Oh, I really liked him. He had, you know, he was very personable." And I said, "Yeah, he was great." She said, "That is not what doctors were like when I was growing up." She said, "I did not like the doctors. They were kind of mean." And so, you know, having that different generational perspective on how you are supposed to interact with a healthcare provider and how they are supposed to interact with you, you know, that's an important thing to keep in mind, because it's changed and our older adults may not always realize or feel comfortable advocating for themselves, because they may not feel like that's something they're supposed to do.
Yeah, comfortability and conversations, they go hand in hand often a lot of times. We're speaking with Dr. Corinne Allman. She is an author, speaker, and care manager, and we are talking about all things aging and how Dr. Allman is trying to change the conversation when it comes to aging. And we're going to continue our conversation with her right after this. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680 WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF, AM 680 and WPTF.com. 60 minutes devoted to giving you all the information you need when caring for a loved one with Mary Lucas and Jason Kong. If you have questions for the show, you can email agingmatters@transitionslifecare.org.
You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680 WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Hey, if you want to learn more about Transitions Life Care, be sure to check out transitionslifecare.org. Transitionslifecare.org. It's an excellent resource for you and your families. Check out all the information there related to the services that they're able to provide, events, as well as job openings as well. It's all at transitionslifecare.org. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas and Carson Sellers in the studio on the line with us. We are very happy to have Dr. Corinne Allman with us. She's an author, a speaker, and care manager, and we're talking about all things related to aging. We've covered a lot of ground so far. I've got into a discussion related to ageism, and in the last segment, Carson, we also got into the discussion related to retirement as well. So let's pick up there.
Yeah, absolutely. So when it comes to retirement, this is typically viewed by society as a time to wind down. But you argue that retirement can be much more than that. Can you expand on your thoughts around reimagining what retirement can look like?
Sure. So this goes back to earlier in our conversation when I was talking about how our lifespans have changed, how we're living longer and healthier than we ever have before. So to just give you some context for that, when Social Security was first enacted in the 1930s, you got Social Security at 65, and the average American lifespan at the time was 67. Wow. So we were expecting you to collect your Social Security for a couple of years, and that was your retirement. Then it was going to be done. Today, the average American lifespan is in the mid-70s. It's 76, 77, depending on if you're male or female. So that's a whole extra decade of time that, on average, people are getting that previous generations did not get. And again, that's just the average. We've got more people living to their 80s, 90s, and beyond 100 than we've ever had previously. The client that I was with at the hospital yesterday, she is 96, going to be 97 here very soon, and has been living independently and, you know, doing all kinds of things right up until this moment. So she's had 96 years of active life, and that is really different than previous generations. So while these years have changed, our thinking about older adulthood has not. We still talk about retirement at 65. Well, if you retired in the 1930s at 65, you had 2 to 5 years on average after that. Today, if you retire at 65, you're looking at 2 or 3 decades ahead of you. And that is a lot of time to sit in your rocking chair and watch TV or play golf or do these kinds of relaxation activities that we think about. And what you typically see, and there's good research on this now, people retire and they have kind of a honeymoon period after they retire of about 18 months to 2 years, where they do have a lot of recreational activity, they travel, they're enjoying their retirement. And then after that time period, after the 18 months to 2 years, they start to kind of look around and go, well, wait a minute, I still have a lot to give. I still want to do stuff. What am I going to do for the next 20 years that I have ahead of me? And that transition period is when people really struggle and have to rethink their retirement. What am I going to do that makes me want to get out of bed on a Wednesday morning, that excites me, that gives me purpose? And that can be a job. It can be continuing to work. It could be going to work part-time. It could be starting a new business, that business you've always wanted to do but never could. It can be volunteering. It can be caregiving. It can be taking classes, anything you want it to be. As long as you have something that makes you want to get out of bed. And the problem is, again, our societal message has not changed. And so what I see is people who get to this stage and they really struggle because they want to do stuff and they want to have purpose and meaning. And yet the societal messaging is, well, you should just be retired. You know, we don't really need you for anything anymore. We don't want to hire you. We don't really need your assistance with anything. Go enjoy yourself. But there's only so much of that relaxation stuff you can do before you kind of get depressed. Like, nobody needs me. I don't have any purpose. And so figuring out that transition is essential for people in the retirement years. Whatever, you know, whenever it is that you retire, and that can be at lots of different ages now, figuring out, okay, if I'm not going to be going to work every day, what is it that I'm going to do that's going to excite me and make me want to get out of bed on a Wednesday morning?
It's really, these are all really good points. My mom is in this situation. She may listen to this show, so shout out to her. She retired, kind of. She didn't like the job she was in, and she was like, you know what, I'm just going to take a break. And it may be retiring, but hasn't really announced it as that yet. But for her, she has spent her entire career just work all the time, really, really hard. In your experience, how have you seen people successfully transition into a new phase of life and retirement, particularly those like my mom who have been so entrenched in their careers that the idea of retirement for her almost seems daunting? Like she needs something to do. How have you seen people successfully or what are some thoughts around that and ways that you can kind of, you know, get it kick-started?
Sure. So I've seen people handle this several different ways, and there's no right or wrong way. It's very individual. So my own mom retired originally at 55. She was a teacher for 30 years, and she retired at 55. And that lasted about 6 months before she said, I didn't realize how much of my social life was, you know, related to my job. All my friends were at my job, and now I'm home all the time and they're still at work and I don't get to see them, and this is no good. So she went back to teaching part-time about 6 months after her first retirement, and then continued on with that for several years before she officially retired. So that's a very common thing, to have people retire and then go back to work at least part-time, you know, in a different role. She wasn't in the same position that she was in before. And it was a much more flexible schedule being part-time. But that was perfect because she got her socialization back. She continued to have purpose. But it wasn't the rigid schedule, the work that it was before. I've also seen people, one of the examples, the stories I tell in the book is of an oncologist who, you know, he was a doctor. So he's working 60, 80 hour weeks. And he said very clearly in my interview with him that retirement was really hard, because when you are working 60 to 80 hour weeks, you don't have time for hobbies. You don't have time for these leisure activities that you're supposed to go off and enjoy in retirement. So he was really struggling with all the free time and with not driving his wife crazy at home. And what does he want to do? Like, what is he interested in? If he's going to have hobbies, what should they be? And he has now joined a Rotary Club, and he has become the service chair for the Rotary Club. So he's planning all their service programs. And then he also is playing the banjo and is in a band and doing musical gigs all the time. So he's figured it out. But when I interviewed him originally, he was right in the middle of that transition. And, you know, it's not easy because you've taken someone who was really busy, who was really good at their job, was very sure-footed in their position, and you've put them out, I'll say, into the wilderness of retirement and said, okay, go enjoy yourself. And they're kind of looking around going, do I even know what I enjoy? What do I want to do now? And so, you know, trial and error, figuring things out, trying different clubs, trying different organizations, trying musical instruments, those kinds of things helped him figure out what to do. So I think those are two examples, you know, specifically, but very common kinds of experiences that people have when they retire in terms of what am I going to do now sorts of interactions.
You know, I struggle just figuring out what I'm going to have for lunch, you know, let alone figuring out how I'm going to fill retirement. That is, you know, it's a big question. It's a big ask, and it requires a lot of thought and contemplation and probably trying out lots of different things. Dr. Allman, thank you so much for your time today. If folks are interested in learning more about you or want to get a hold of your book, what's the best way to do that?
Sure. So I have a website. It's just my name, CorinneAllman.com, and there's links to the book as well as media interviews like this. And if you want to reach out to me directly, you can do that through the website as well.
Perfect. CorinneAllman.com. Dr. Corinne Allman, thank you so much again for your time today. We really appreciate the conversation and the insight that you've been able to provide for us related to aging.
Oh, thank you for having me.
That's been our pleasure. We're going to take a quick break. We've got some more. Stick around. You're listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9, AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic.
This is Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you. On WPTF, AM 680, and WPTF.com. Joined by Mary Lucas from Transitions Life Care. Here's your host, Jason Kong.
Welcome back to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680, WPTF News, Talk, Traffic. Jason Kong here with Mary Lucas and Carson Sellers, and we're taking a little bit of a detour compared to where we were the past three segments of this show. And Mary, you know, for those who have followed along with this program over some time, know that you are a pet lover. You know, you are involved with fostering dogs, not just dogs, though. You've handled dogs that often have some sort of terminal illness, and you are incredible for doing that, let me just say, because that would be extremely difficult for me. But you are also connected to this world of pet fostering and pet adoption, and there's a lot going on locally and some things that we can all keep in mind as we get older and we have these conversations related to aging.
Absolutely. I volunteer with a local rescue, Neshama Animal Rescue, and we work very closely with our shelters, especially here in Wake County, but also in the surrounding counties and some of the more rural shelters. Wake County is actually, the animal shelter announced a 30-day closure late last week because of an illness, but also it's full. Shelters are across our state are always full. And the reality is we're losing animals as people go and buy and purchase animals. So rethink that maybe if it's something that you care about. But long story short, you know, as we think about on this show, Aging Matters, I think a lot about as I age and as my family ages, where do pets go? Say you land in the hospital or someone that you love is in a nursing home, what happens with their pet? And sadly, a lot of the times they land at the shelter. And a lot of the times they reach out to us, and hopefully we can try to find a home for it in the rescue or a foster home for it while we plan for a long-term home for these animals. But I wanted to touch on legacy planning for your pets and why it's important. If you have pets and you are aging, it's never too soon to start this conversation. Maybe think about designating a pet guardian, someone who is a trusted person who can care for your pet if you land in the hospital or you have to have a short stay at a nursing facility, someone who is willing and capable to take on that responsibility, even if it's just a short period of time that they could take the pet for a few weeks while you recover. I think that's something that's really important to have in mind, because a lot of the times those pets end up at the shelter and they do come back. Someone will come out of the hospital and wonder what happened to their animal. So have a plan, have a pet guardian who is willing to do that, or neighbor who's willing to step in, whatever it may be. Also, and we've talked about this on the show before, I don't know if you remember, Jason, we had an attorney come on and was doing we had a conversation about legacy planning, pet trust, or he was talking about trust and how he had a single woman who, do you remember she was, she put all of her money for her animal. It was a couple years ago we had this conversation. This is me when I get older. but the concept of a pet trust is not a new one, where arrangement is made where money is set aside specifically for the care of your pets and making sure they're financially supported. Where this could be very helpful is if someone that is taking care of your pets after you've passed or after you're no longer take care for them and you have money set aside for them, it makes it much easier to ask a rescue, say, hey, we have this money, we have all the records for this animal, would you be willing to take this animal in to find it a new forever home? And being able to donate money to a nonprofit to be able to take the animal in, or at least provide vet records or whatever it may be, is very, very helpful and is more likely to have a rescue step up and volunteer to take in that animal. Another thing about reaching out to rescues, if you need to find a place for your pet, if you come with a foster for the dog or cat already, so you've found someone who's willing to foster the dog or cat but isn't willing to keep it long term, and you reach out to a rescue and say, hey, I already have a foster for Meemaw's dog, and she's willing to foster, she or he is willing to foster this dog until it finds a permanent home. Are you willing to take it? That is a much easier conversation for a rescue to have than, hey, take this dog, which is a lot harder ask of a rescue when there are no foster homes. Make sure your veterinary records are up to date and you have them all on hand. That's always very important. And it makes it a lot easier for a rescue to take in an animal when they know the background or history. I had a dog that I took in a couple weeks ago, Luke, and his owner died in a really tragic accident. He was his owner was not old. His owner was middle age, and Luke lived with him his entire life, and the dog was heartbroken. I took him in a couple weeks ago. He's a miniature pincher, and Luke came with all of his vet records, so we knew everything that was wrong with the dog. We knew exactly what we were setting ourselves up for. I knew that he had to be muzzled to have his nails trimmed, so I sure as heck didn't try to do it. you know, all these things are so important, and because somebody came to the shelter with, and he ended at the shelter, but he came to our home after that. And now he's living in a forever home with somebody who loves miniature pinchers. Shout out to Melanie. I'm so excited that you took Luke in. But they had a somewhat of a plan. Someone took care of Luke for a couple months while things settled down with the family, and then helped to find him a home. So I think all of those things are really important. Just make sure you have these conversations with your family ahead of an illness or an emergency where you land in the hospital or a nursing home or assisted living or wherever it may be, and no one knows what to do. So just a shout out to all the animal lovers out there, and thank you for all the rescues. Thank you for everything you do, and our shelter staff and people who are working in the shelters. That is not an easy job, and they get a lot of heat for not being able to take in an animal, but you don't know what's going on the other side. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, this is a great topic, because as much as we talk about planning on this show, pets is a subject that it gets overlooked, because, you know, mm-hmm. we only have so much time to cover so many things. But this is an important topic to bring up. And, you know, it's also important that seniors do have pets, because there is such a positive impact on it. We just want to make sure that we've got planning in place. place as well to make sure that it's a good situation for all parties involved.
Absolutely.
Well, we're out of time for today. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to head over to WPTF.com if you want to catch a replay of this show or wherever you get podcasts. Just look for Aging Matters and you'll be able to subscribe and download there. On behalf of Mary Lucas and Carson Sellers, I'm Jason Kong, thanking you for listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you, a service of Transitions Life Care. It's your life, your care on FM 92.9 and AM 680 WPTF News Talk Traffic. Have a wonderful day.
You've been listening to Aging Matters, care and comfort that surrounds you on WPTF AM 680 and WPTF.com. For more information, log on to transitionslifecare.org.